Karen. Very good. Okay. Welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeater Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find the audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be a time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Caitlin S. from Ontario, who is a compulsive overeater.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks,
Yeah.
Annette. Caitlin, compulsive overeater and bulimic. So I'm going to share tonight on what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. My story is very specific to myself. It's my experience. It doesn't represent OA as a whole. I invite you to take what resonates and disregard the rest. There's a million stories at OA. So I am a compulsive overeater and bulimic. I identify as a bulimic because it was a big part of my story, but I do want to be clear that my disease has always tended towards the overeating as opposed to the restricting. But I, at the end of the day, I don't think it really has to do with, I think it's more about the disease in general, and I'd love to share a little bit more about what it was like. It's funny, in kind of thinking about speaking tonight, I got kind of this memory, and it was getting up for work and trying on every piece of clothing I had in my wardrobe, and sometimes trying each on 3 times, and then becoming so frustrated that I would break down crying and I would call in sick to work. And what I would do is I would stay home and I would binge and I would isolate. And that happened a lot. So I've actually put together kind of a list of some of my memories and kind of the things that my life was like before OA and recovery. Missing important events. Not being there for family and friends, because not wanting to go out because I felt fat, or just in general, I felt terrible. And so calling last minute and bailing and apologizing or making excuse or outright lying and just staying home and eating. Eating until I passed out on the couch, and then I would in the morning painfully tear myself off the couch and drag myself to work, but not just feeling terrible. Being on the subway and feeling like everyone was staring at me and judging me for being fat. And to me, their eyes felt like knives. Going out into public felt like I was constantly being stabbed with little knives. I would pretend that I was ordering for my whole family when I was ordering my binge foods. I would lie about what I was doing to friends and family. I'd hide food, sneak food. If I was at a party or worked at a restaurant, I stole food, as much as I could get as fast as I could without them knowing. I threw up initially when I started this as a teenager. The idea, and it's always a great idea, is I'm going to be able to manage my weight by doing this. And the hard part is that I would try my best to restrict, but then I couldn't hold on to it. And so I would binge and then I would purge. And the problem is once you purge, you're hungry again. And I was open for business. And so what it actually ended up becoming was a binge purge cycle that just continued on loop for days sometimes. Cried myself to sleep because I was fat alone, but most importantly, because of what I was doing to myself and the violence that I was enacting upon myself. I don't care who you are. You can't have self-esteem if you are torturing yourself and actively harming yourself. It erodes a sense of self and self-esteem. When I was a young child, at every family gathering, there would be treats out on the table, like all of the best desserts and all the things. And I would essentially sneak and pick and eat and eat and eat until I would get diarrhea, and I would be stuck for the rest of the night in the washroom at my aunt's or my grandma's or my cousin's place. And the shame that I felt around that, but my inability to not be able to change my behavior around that. During the holiday season, there'd be baked goods, and there would be my parents left out treats like candies and chocolates for guests. And I remember for the entire month of December not being able to think of anything in the house but the awareness of where these things were. I knew where in the pantry there's going to be the baked goods, in the living room there's going to be the chocolates, and then there's going to be the candies over here in that little bowl, that little crystal bowl. It would just, I would try and see how many times I could make the rounds and pocket as many things as I could. But the thing is, I always had the awareness. It was always these things. I knew exactly where they were, and they just buzzed in my mind. And I would collect them, and I would put them in a box and hide them in this vent grate. And then when it was bedtime and everyone went to bed, I would binge on them. I did that for the entire month of December. when I was a teenager, I remember spending entire days of binging and purging and binging and purging, and then being in the shower and just staying in a hot shower for hours, and then doing it again and not knowing what was wrong with me, not knowing how to fix it, but knowing that I felt terrible. And I don't know what it was about life for me. I would say that overall, I had a very idyllic upbringing. I had a family that loved and cared with me about me, and I had a family that weren't addicts either. And I had a family that created a stable, place for me. But for as long as I can remember, there was just something that life and my emotions were too big. They were too big for everything. And then when puberty happened, it just compartment it just piled on more. And so that was what it was like. It was just me doing my best, surviving. And I don't know why living was so uncomfortable. If you asked me, I believe there's a JJ that needs to be extricated from the meeting. Life was so loud, and I didn't know why. And I did my best. And if you asked me, I'd say I loved life. I had dreams, I had aspirations, I had talents, I did things, I was social. But for some reason, everything was too big and it was too loud, and I had no way of dealing with that. So around the age of 31, I came into OA. I came in on my birthday was my very first meeting, my 31st birthday, because I knew I could not go another 30 years living like this. I didn't know what I was going to do, but months before, I'd Googled Overeaters Anonymous because I'd Googled food addiction. And then I found out about this, and then I sat on it for another 3 months. And then I finally worked up the courage to go to a meeting. And then I went and I heard people talking, and I cried for the whole meeting, and I identified, and then I didn't go back for 2 weeks. And then I started going back biweekly, and then it was weekly. And the more I was there, the more I was like, I heard hope. I heard people who ate like I didn't, felt about food like I felt. And I saw these people with 10 years of recovery, 5 years of recovery, maintaining a weight loss, and I could not believe it. But it was really inspiring hope in me. And so I got a sponsor, and I started working the steps. I personally found that putting the food down was the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. And I don't think I would be able to do it again, which is a really important part of my step one. It was really hard. And so, trying to come up with an abstinence was really hard. Because at first, if you'd asked me, well, what are your binge foods? What are your red light foods? Well, I can binge on everything. Well, that's not quite true. I probably wouldn't binge on an apple or a carrot. But my sponsor said, why don't you start with the things taking out of your apartment, the things that you can't have there without binging on them. And she said, well, why don't we start first with 3 meals a day and 2 snacks? Anybody can do 3 meals a day and 2 snacks, but if you'd asked me on any given day, that was way too much food or not enough food. And the point is that my disease wants flexibility so that it can use food to manage my emotions. And if you have 3 meals a day, 1 plate each, and 2 snacks, well, what if I don't have that meal or that snack there when I need it emotionally? It's a terrifying idea to be able to walk away from a crutch that's helped you numb things for your entire life. And then what do you lean on? It's this dance between like getting, letting go of the one thing that has made your life comfortable and then finding something else. But again, I had the faith and the hope that I could do this, and there was nowhere else I could go. I had nothing else at this point. At first, because everything was so noisy and loud from a food perspective, and because I kept relapsing, like you would think that 3 meals a day and 2 snacks again was ample food, but I couldn't stick to it because I would have an alcoholic food and I'd be off to the races and I wouldn't email my sponsor for 3 days. And then I would sh ashamedly come back and we'd start again. And so through these relapses, I kind of got a really better idea about the alcoholic foods that were really, I could not eat them comfortably. Like I could not stick to my abstinence and have these in my diet. At first, I got rid of a lot more food groups until I had some abstinence. About a month and a half in to abstinence, I can't. Only the food fog cleared, and it's such an incredible experience because to actually have your eyes clear and be able to sit down and have a meal, enjoy it, but then afterwards feel full and be glad to move on and do other things in your life was absolutely revolutionary. I'd never experienced that in my entire life. It had always been like, oh, I have to let go of it, but I want more. And then maybe I'll have more later. And then I'll just kind of, play around with it. And then like I'd never experienced what it was like to experience satiety around food and then quietness. Once that food fog cleared, I was able to identify that there were some foods that actually in the end were quiet and I could bring some of the things back. It's almost like the clarity from being away from your alcoholic substance for a long enough time gives you this perspective that A, you can start working the steps, and B, you can feel when a food is clean and when a food is not. I'd never been able to feel that. It was always this big muddy mess. And so getting sober was the hardest thing I've ever done. But it was also the most incredible thing because I was now understood how someone could live years and do this because I wasn't constantly being pelted with the pressure of needing to eat. I'm going to really quickly show you some pictures. I have mixed feelings. Oh, sorry. About, kind of before and after photos. But I was looking at these, and every once in a while, I go back to them only because there are times when I'm like, the body dysmorphia takes over, and I'm like, have I changed? Am I overweight? What's happening? And then it helps me to at least be like, I don't look like this anymore. And it's just a reminder that, okay, I still don't have to worry about weight. I can just focus on my recovery. I can just focus on being present in my life. And I can just focus on service to others. And I can tell you that each one of these photos, I was out in the world and I was doing things and I was loving it. However, there was always this rat's nest in the back of my mind that was, and this obsession around food that kind of was a pall over all of those good things. So I share them as a reminder to myself, share them kind of because I think it's important to show that this program works physically as well as mentally and emotionally. So working the steps. I did my fourth step when I had been sober, and I've tried to do four steps in the food, and because of that food fog, I cannot get at honesty and truth. It just, for some reason, it just, I can't see inside. And so having that fog lifted, all of a sudden, I'm a little bit more open to being, to self-examination and to be able to do an inventory. My fourth step was rigorous. I did it the first time around, the OA way. I did the questions in the workbook, and also I think there's a million and a half questions in chapter four in the OA 12 and 12. And I was glad to have done it that way because those questions leave nothing on the table. They leave nothing on the table. You can't wiggle out. It's not about, well, this is kind of a resentment I have and how I feel about it. And it literally asks you about everything, you know, that falls under selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, afraid, and resentment. And I worked through each of those, and every time I gave it away, because I gave it away in pieces, I felt lighter. And not just a little lighter, I felt a chunk of lighter. I told my sponsor things that I was so deeply ashamed of that I would never tell anyone. Sexual things, you know, awful things, embarrassing things. It was weird that sometimes the hardest things to share, the things that I felt the most shame around, was just times when I felt foolish or when I looked foolish. And what it showed me was that when she was absolutely not surprised by any of the things that I was telling her, and she took it in stride. And in some situations, she was able to look at and be like, you know, you weren't at fault here. And then there was other situations that were like, you know, you were at fault. And did you see this? And I didn't. The thing is, you know, the fourth step is this incredible, powerful tool which allows us to step back from self and make self smaller so that you can see the world as it is. And that's been a huge transformative piece. I worked my program, my steps up till nine. I started sponsoring. I didn't finish nine, and things started kind of trailing off. I was in love with my new body. I was excited. I was dating. And like maybe service wasn't as important anymore. And then all of a sudden, all of my step 10s and my resentments, my fears started building up. And then all of a sudden, they became unmanageable. And I haven't worked through the last three resentments and fears. How am I supposed to work through this new one that happened today? And life started getting really, really loud again. And then when they say that the food is the last to go, I mean it. Well, my experience has been my first step one was so, you know, I think you can interpret it a lot of different ways, but I had such a strong step one because I knew how hard my life was in the food and how incredibly powerful it was. And so I knew I would never touch my binge foods. I would never, except everything else in life was getting so excruciating. And I mean, I went and I did Reiki. I saw a psychotherapist, and but I couldn't work that program, and I couldn't let God in, and I couldn't give up. I couldn't let go of some very strong ideas that I needed to have. I need to have this job. I need to have this boyfriend. And also, I worked this hard, so I deserve those things. I would not let go of them. And I was crying every day. I was making reach out calls, and I was crying to members five times, five different members a day. Oh my God, I can't do it. But I could not let go, and I could not truly put God first and my interpretation of my higher power first. I just felt like I needed these things. And that was when the first food thoughts started happening again. And it says it in the big book. It's like, if you do not continue your spiritual maintenance, sooner or later, life is going to get bigger than your higher power, bigger than your recovery. And then the food thoughts are going to start. Why is it that I feel like I need a job and I need a relationship, but it's the food thoughts that come up? That's my magical solution. And then they started pelting me every day, again and again. The food thoughts, the food thoughts, the food thoughts. And I was in ex at that point, I was in full-on mental obsession. It was so excruciating because I knew I couldn't go back to this food. But I knew I was in extreme pain and I couldn't deal with life. And then I started thinking and bargaining to myself, like the mental obsession, how that manifests is like your brain says, well, hey, you just need quiet. We need rest. We need comfort. You could go back for a little bit. You could go back and everything would go away and you'd be quiet and wouldn't be numbing. And but you've recovered again, but so you could do it again. You've recovered, so you can go back and you could do
10
it again.
minutes remaining.
And this idea just kept on going. It's like I could have oblivion, I could have quiet, and I could go recover again later. And that is the same exact the diet starts Monday idea, this threadbare idea that I had my entire life before I came into OA and worked the steps. And for some reason, it felt new and shiny to me. And so, I called member after member and cried, and then finally I said, listen, I'm gonna go binge now. And I did. And it was like jumping into off of a cliff deep into water, and everything was quiet. Everything was quiet for days. I felt underwater, and I've never felt so high in my life. And I was not using drugs or alcohol because I realized at that point truly what the food did to me. Having been absent and having those foods out of my body for 2 years and then putting them all back in, I realized a couple of things at that point. I realized truly what it means to be powerless over food. Because I think I had some illusions like, oh, I can use the tools, right? I'm really good at the tools. I'm really good at showing up and putting effort in. I can do 90 and 90 and get sober again. I did 90 and 90 and I didn't get sober. I did 30 and 30, I didn't get sober. I called a member every day and I didn't get sober. I tried all of my tools and all my tools were broken because I truly knew at the bottom of my heart that food, I loved food more than I love life. What food does for me is more powerful than what life has to offer me, but it is a degenerate way of living and it is awful. It took me 3 years to claw my way out of that relapse. And when I did, it was literally just because I saw an out and I ran. It was like I was in a tumbler. It's the first time that I actually realized that there's, if you, it is a progressive disease. And I am not in control of my brain at certain times. Like it was compulsive. I had to eat that day. I could feel it coming on, one of the food obsession. I'm like, there's nothing I can do against it. I was truly powerless over food. And so, since I've been out of the food, that was 6 years ago, and I haven't touched my binge food since then. And I was working the steps and I tried to work it, and I started working it the big book way. And I'm not saying that one is better than the other, but to me, doing it both ways is incredibly important. But where I feel like the big book has been so important to me is the maintenance steps. It is once you, it's a lot less ambiguous. It's like, on a daily basis, once you've gone through the first 10, like nine, 1 through 9, and finished those, it has a recipe for like you just live in 10, 11, 12 for the rest of your life. And that was the piece I was missing. And that's the piece that I always struggle with. And so it's the piece that I think is incredibly important. So it's doing inventories on a daily basis, it's being of service. It's looking for selfishness, self-seeking, dishonesty, and fear. And it's continuing to do that every day. And it's asking God to direct my thoughts, asking Him to break my reliance on self, and also to see things a different way. And so at this point in my life, that's what I do. I work with a sponsor, and I have the life that I want. I have the life that I want. I'm very thankful. And every morning I wake up wanting to protect it. Because I also know that if I went back, there is no telling, there's no tools that I can use, and there's no way of knowing when I could get out again, if I could get out again. And all of the things that I care about and that I built in this life would be destroyed. And so my sponsor also, it's part of my step 12. I don't do any of this perfectly. I look for food behaviors. I don't have a lot of difficulty with my red light foods. None of them call to me anymore. I know I'm under no illusions as to what, wanting them, because they all spell death for me. But food behaviors are ones that are hard, that I work on and that I struggle with. And I would say every couple of years I've been resetting my abstinence, because my food behaviors have gotten just like the boundaries around them are not as strong as they need to be. And I find that I reset my abstinence. It hurts every time that I do it, but it also means that the protective wall between me and the food, I need to keep that strong. And that's more important than I guess a number, or like a medallion, or whatever. This is the rest of my life, and I need to keep on a daily basis making sure that those boundaries are keeping me safe, and that I'm setting them up for success as opposed to eroding them. Every time I do a little dishonesty, that wall gets a little softer, and it's protecting me. It is keeping me sober and in a life that I want to live. So, yeah. Don't think if there's anything else. I would say that my relapse also humbled me in a way that I really needed to be humbled. I've heard the term that there's life on my terms, life on God's, or sorry, life on my terms, life on life's terms, and life on God's terms. Before coming to OA, it was always life on my terms. And to be honest, when you expect the entire world to conform and serve you, it's a really uncomfortable place to be, because the world doesn't really do that. And so if you have expectations that I need this, this, and this, to be happy and to be fulfilled, and it's all about me, that's just a recipe for resentments and pain. Life on life's terms has been for me getting out of self and increasingly being able to view the world as it is, objectively and in truth. Not easy to do. I'm a storyteller. I like to manipulate the world it is to serve whatever need I have at the time, but I work on that because I want to be able to show up in the world and realize that, the world was here before me. I only have another, what, maybe 40 years on this earth, 40, 50 years, if I'm lucky, on this earth. And then, I don't want to waste it railing against existence. I want to participate. And then there's life on God's terms, and I'm not there yet. Every once in a while, I get glimpses. To me, life on God's terms is when I see examples of love and self-sacrifice. It's not, say, me just realizing I'm going into a hard situation. This is going to be hard, but I'll be okay. It's the new voice that says, I'm going into a hard situation. How can I make it better for everyone? That is a really hard place for me to go. Sometimes I can do it. Sometimes I see it into others and it elevates my spirit. Because I've been an atheist. I'm even in recovery, I'm kind of agnostic. But when I see beauty, truth, and love in my day-to-day life, and I see another voice,
2 minutes.
that's where I see my higher power, that it elevates me beyond just Meeting the world as it is, well, how can I change the world to make it something it could be? And it's a state of agency that I really equate to recovery, and I stretch for it, but I don't always achieve it. And some days, the best thing I can do is be like, have just very moderate expectations of the world around me. There's something really beautiful about having little to no expectations around of the world around you and just meeting it where it is and then making a life out of that. I don't know that I have too much else to share other than tonight I'm going to do my report to my sponsor. I'm going to say my prayers, I'm going to be thankful, and then tomorrow I'm going to get up and I'm going to do my prayers and I'm going to try not to hurt anybody. I'm going to try not to smear myself over whoever comes into contact with me. I'm going to try and meet the world on the world's terms. And if I am lucky and have courage and God kind of gives me the power to do so, maybe at various points I can meet the world on God's terms. So, thanks.
Thank you so much, Caitlin.